Good morning, and welcome to Talking About California. And this morning, to another in our series of discussions with Californians who talk about their home and their work here. I'm Cal Winslow, I'm your host. Our guest this morning is Alice Walker. I confess to being at a loss for what more to say, by way of introduction, that is. Alice, after all, is our neighbor, but she's much more than that. I wonder how many listeners this morning have not read at least something from her or haven't heard her on the radio, perhaps on this station. And she's, of course, a well-known citizen of the world, perhaps almost everyone's neighbor. Alice, of course, is author of many books of prose and also collections of poetry. Instead of going over a long list, I suggest listeners pay a visit to her very fine website, alicesgarden.com, for books and much more. This morning, the occasion is, first of all, our very good luck that she can join us, but also the publication of two fine new volumes from Alice, acclaimed already. The first, The Cushion in the Road, subtitled Meditation and Wandering as the Whole World Awakens to Being in Harm's Way. And the second collection of poems is The World Will Follow Joy, subtitled Turning Madness into Flowers. Both are published by New Press. Good morning, Alice.
Good morning.
And thanks so much again. Well, let's begin with these two books, if you don't mind. Both titles refer to the state of our world, and reading through them, that's often the content. Maybe you could tell us a bit about your feelings about these subjects and how you came to title your books the way you did.
Well, yes, I'd be happy to. The world will follow joy as it awakens to the reality that that's what the planet is meant for. The planet is meant for joy. Anytime you walk around and look at just what's happening here in nature, and, you know, it's clear that this is a world that is just so amazing, that everything about it is just incredible. And we have been so downtrodden by our various problems that most of us haven't even noticed it. I mean, those of us in Anderson Valley have noticed it because we can't help but notice it. It's so gorgeous there. But everything is telling us. So when we awaken to the reality that that's what we should be about here, you know, who knows what's happening in the rest of the universe and the cosmos and the other planets, I think we will be totally affirmed in our realization that the sociopaths who are wrecking everything, we don't have to endure. So we will stop electing them, we will stop following them, and we will, you know, want somebody with us who is joyful, and we will want to be that way. And the other book is The Cushion in the Road, Meditation and Wandering as the Whole World Awakens to Being in Harm's Way, is about how, as a 60-year-old some years ago, I was trying my darndest to get my meditation cushion in place in a very quiet retreat and not move or, you know, ever. And the world, however, just kept calling, and I realized that I couldn't really sit there. I had to, you know. So to make it really short, I had a dream in which my meditation cushion appeared on the center line in the middle of the highway. And it was a message that I want to sit. I need to sit in meditation, but I need to also be in the road going about in the world. And so it has to be a portable cushion.
What kind of, when you say harm's way, could you tell us just a little bit about what you're thinking about? I know it's a big subject, but...
Oh, no, it's not so big. I'm thinking about things like Monsanto, you know, I mean, about poisoned food. You know, we are bombing other people with actual bombs, but we're bombing ourselves with bad food and with, you know, all kinds of crazy inventions and badly designed, you know, stuff all around us. So you know, it's so sad. It's like humanity is just constantly pouring poison over itself. And in that sense, you know, that we can't even keep our children from being over-vaccinated. You know, we cannot keep our children from apparently, you know, buying guns everywhere around, you know, our communities. In that sense, you know, harm's way, which, you know, our presidents used to talk about, you know, harm's way being over there or somewhere with the soldiers, you know, in harm's way. Well, harm's way is right here. And that's the other thing we have to really awaken to, that we are in harm's way if we sit in our studies and do nothing but play, you know, computer games. I mean, there's one right there. So the whole world is awakening to this, I think. And I'm praying that the whole world is awakening to it, because if we don't awaken to it, we're just going to sit here and, you know, be killed off.
The gun issue is a big issue this morning on the news, I think.
What is?
The gun issue.
Oh, the gun issue,
yeah,
right.
Have you been involved in that discussion at all?
Well, you know, having been shot when I was 8, I have a real history of not liking guns. I just, you know, it's just amazing to me that we, again, humanity, that we let this happen, that we let the world be flooded with guns. And I think for many Americans, they're only noticing that now that we see what's happening in this culture. But guns have been flooding the planet from the manufacturers, you know, and from the people who make, you know, the states that make a lot of money, including, of course, the United States, forever. I mean, I was just so upset 20 years ago when Africa, you know, the poor people of Africa who can barely often afford food, there they were suddenly with huge guns, you know, these little kids often with huge guns looking like, what are we going to do with these things? And now we see what they've done with them. You know, they've trashed their communities. They've, you know, killed old people, and they've, you know, done all kinds of things. And this is not just them. I mean, this is just the madness that happens when you have a society in which you have rampant drug misuse coupled with rampant availability of weapons.
And you write a lot about women and children in particular. Maybe you could say a word about that focus.
Well, the feminine is what keeps the planet alive. Without a feminine, it's dead. And so, you know, that's a root reason to just, you know, stand your ground on the feminine. And I personally feel that unless the planet is turned over to the care of the feminine, I mean, whoever has the feminine, there are men who have the good feminine, of course. we don't have much of a chance, because I think male leadership has proven that it is just not the answer by far. And we have to, you know, come up with something much better. And I propose that we begin to listen to the leadership of indigenous women and women of color. But especially, you know, women, whoever they are, who have held on to some of the traditional ancestral wisdom about how you live here. You know, I mean, how do you live on this planet? How do you take care of it? What is the planet's due from humanity? What is that? And there are people, there are cultures who have, you know, spent their lifetime trying to hold that place for us, that place of knowledge. You know, why are we here? You know, most people don't even think about why we're here. But why are we here?
Right. And children, I've often heard you ask people a very pointed question. It sort of begins with, well, if you love children, do you know what I'm referring to there?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the millions and billions of people who claim they love children and won't move a muscle when they see them being bummed to bits.
Yeah.
It's very hard to bear. You know, I mean, you sit there with your precious child as if you don't realize that everybody else's child is precious, and that your responsibility is not just to your precious child, but to every precious child on the planet.
Right. And our legacy is tied up, I guess you've suggested, in how we we treat our children.
Well, what legacy is there if you have children who, you know, are basically taught that everybody else's child is not valuable and they can be sent all over there, wherever that is, to just kill them? You know, that is what is happening. Hmm. And the United States is so guilty of this, you know, the brainwashing that goes into making all of our young people think that, you know, they can do this and be happy. You know, I mean, I just did a talk for the Veterans for Peace, in which I talk about that cover on Time magazine that said one a day, you know, the number of soldiers who are killing themselves after they've been in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And, you know, who wouldn't? I mean, from the horrific things that we hear that are going on in these wars, who wouldn't want to kill themselves after they've done these things? I mean, how are you going to deal with that? And then when they come here, who is willing to even listen to what they've done and what they've had to do and what they've seen and what they've experienced? And you know, not to mention how so many of them come back in pieces, you know? I mean, my partner was, you know, virtually kidnapped and sent to Vietnam. Hmm. And he talks about how when they came back, nobody wanted to hear. You know, nobody wanted to hear what had really happened. They all wanted to be, you know, somehow proud. You know, we're supposed to be proud of our people who've just gone over there and killed a whole village. I mean, how are you going to do that?
And I think you've called that America's war, if I'm
well,
not mistaken.
Well, it is. The Vietnamese didn't do it. I mean, they were over there trying to protect their land and protect their water and protect their children and protect their schools and their whatever else they have. And then, you know, here we come after the French, you know, have pretty much wrecked them. And now their children, a lot of them are being born with horrible, you know, deformations. And, you know, we have to live with that. And you can't really just block it out of your consciousness and still pretend that you care about anything. I mean, how can you do that?
Right. And Alice, there's so many things I want to ask you about, and I hope you won't mind and the listeners won't mind if we change subjects a couple of times, and hopefully this will just encourage everyone to go to that website and to look at these two new books, the ones we've been talking about, The Cushion in the Road and The World Will Follow Joy, both new from New Press. I wanted to ask you also about another subject that comes up in your writing, gardens. I know you wrote a book about our mother's gardens, and I think one of the poems that you include in your latest collection is Going Out to the Garden, and your website is Alice's Gardens. What about gardens for you?
Well, it's Alice Walker's Garden.
Right.
And it is a link to my mother's garden. My mother's garden was a real garden. It was a physical place. And in that place, I noticed that she bloomed into an incredible artist with flowers and with actually vegetables too, because she had two gardens always. But my garden is in some ways, I always have gardens, but it's also a metaphor for my caring about the world. It's about seeing that your garden doesn't just stop at your gate. Your garden is the planet, and you as a human being have a responsibility to take care of as much of the garden as you can. I mean, without killing yourself, you know. I mean, some of us get pretty tired, but you know, you don't have to. It's not about trying to be a martyr. It's just about understanding that as long as you can only care about one little piece of the world, the rest of it is going to go to hell, and also it's going to creep closer and closer to whatever it is you're trying to protect. So I understand, you know, as a gardener, as a human being, the planet is the garden.
Right. And do you have a garden out here in the valley?
Always. Wherever I am, I have one. It's my earth link to my mother, who died in the mid-90s. But I also have one because I believe that in order, you know, cities to me are really not sustainable, and I find them rather frightening. And I feel, on the other hand, that if people had some, I'm always urging people, if you only have a few big pots, because I do this myself, you can grow collard greens in pots. You can grow tomatoes in pots. You can, you know. But luckily, I actually have a garden where I can grow all of that in Anderson Valley out of pots.
Yeah, and a wonderful climate for, as well. Alice, to move on again to another subject, I noticed that you also write quite a bit about prisoners, and it seems to me in solidarity with prisoners. I think you've said things like, you know, one of the major main purposes of life is standing with those people. I wondered if you could say something for us and our listeners about your interest in prisoners.
Well, now they're just canning them, you know, so many prisoners to a cell that you know, there's virtually no movement, you know, really. I mean, you can, some prisoners almost don't have any personal space. This is really very bad on our psyches. You know, we try not to, we do what we can do, but there are so many things that are so horrendous that they become a real burden to the soul. And this is one of those places. And when we think about, the, you know, how they privatized prisons and now they're just using them to make money, and they're using the so-called drug war to create more people that they can scoop up and stuff in there and then, you know, pay some private people lots of money. Because they own the prisons. This is really so horrendous for us to realize. I mean, that you know, there has to be some way to try to change this. I mean, if we don't at least try to liberate people who are so badly treated in incarceration, it's not good for us. You know, we have to think about it. We have to try to do what we can to alleviate the suffering of people. And just seeing, for instance, in Guantanamo, I mean, just for me, I don't know about other people, but just seeing those people in those orange suits with those things over their heads, I know it's meant to terrify us, and it does. You know, we think, my God, you know, they can just keep you indefinitely, and nobody will ever see your face again, and, you know, they can do whatever they like, and nobody knows and nobody cares. But this is a terrible wound, you know, on the consciousness and the psyche of humanity. I mean, we really have to start to see that the terrorism is often against the psyche. You know, it's against the conscience. It's against that human feeling that soon, when it realizes it can't do anything, you know, those men have been down there for, I don't know how many years now. What is it, since they caught them.
Right from the beginning, right.
Okay. Nobody has a clue, really, out here anyhow, just whether they're guilty, whether they're not, who they are, where they're from, you know, how did they actually end up there? And apparently some of them have been cleared to leave, but they're still there. So their response is to, you know, basically try to kill themselves, you know, go on hunger strikes, you know, I'm sure they've... Anyway, but it's, you know... We love to be free. That's just the nature of life. That's, you know, the planet is a planet of joy and movement and creativity. And so to think that anyone is just, you know, abused in this way, you know, hands behind your back, your ankles shackled, and I mean, what does this say about who we are as human beings? There are ways to make people realize their errors, you know, and the horrible things they might have done, although we don't know what these people really have done. But to abuse anyone in this way is very harmful to the collective psyche.
One of your poems is Occupying Mamiya's Cell. That poem, what moved you to write that poem?
I went to see Mamiya twice, and, you know, he's just an amazing being, and he appeared in that horrible orange jumpsuit, shackled, you know, moving like every, like a half inch, every step, that's all he could do, and they'd already, you know, strip searched him, like, what would he have, you know, coming out of his room, his cell. And then you get to talk to him through this. Those people, I tell you, they even made me take off my bra. You know, they were so paranoid that, you know, so I guess I was going to blow the thing up with my bra. But anyway, here is a great human being. You know, he has about as much right to be treated like that as, you know, I don't know, there's no, I can't even think of a metaphor here, a parallel to something. And what does this say about us? You know, it's not, they think, I think, that, you know, these prisoners like Mumia, although there's no one like Mumia really, he's really an exceptional person. But they think that, you know, this is just about, you know, what they're supposed to feel. They're just supposed to feel like absolute dreck, you know, forever and ever and ever, just because of the way they're being treated. But actually, you know, when you experience this, you know, face to face with someone who you just feel in your bones cannot be the person they claim he is, you know, I mean, it is devastating. It is really a very hard thing to bear.
And in your essays, there's the essay, the case of Bradley Manning.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, how dare they treat this young man in this way? You know, the making him stand outside his cell naked, to not give him proper covers at night so he's cold. To humiliate him in every way that they can. And why? Because he wanted to share the truth as he experienced it and knew it of the war. And this was his crime, you know, that he wanted to let the rest of us actually have more of a realistic notion of what war is. And he's a hero. He's very brave, and he is standing for humanity. So I have no, you know, I have just nothing but admiration for him for trying to, you know, alert us to what war really is. It's not a game, you know. I mean, the other thing I've done is I wrote a children's book called Why War is Never a Good Idea, because that's what they sucker us into thinking, that, oh, well, some of these wars are okay because, you know, you got to get rid of these dictators and, oh, God, and, you know, whatever. And they're almost always, in fact, I think always, about some very wealthy people getting even richer by ripping off other people's stuff.
I should say, if I hope you won't mind, that you've been a generous supporter of Mendocino Parents for Peace. I'm part of that group, and I know you've supported people all over the world who are looking for peace. There's another poem, Another Way to Peace. And I see underneath that poems about womanism and motherism. What is there a connection there?
Yes, there is a connection, because I was thinking in the poem, a long poem, Democratic Womanism, that one of the places where women of color are different from women of not of color in feminism is that our history is just different. You know, it is, excuse me, it's basically a history that includes the oppression on racial lines. You know, we're women of color. If we're Native American women, our people have been mostly wiped out and stuffed on reservations. If we're African American women, we have 400 years of enslavement trying to basically produce the workers who've kept, you know, America going. And so, you know, our perspective is very different. And I feel that part of the womanism that is important is that connection to the reality of the actual earth, because we've had to work with it. And we have actually had to have our hands in it. And the same is true of indigenous Native American women. We've had to really have cultures in which Mother Earth was deeply respected, and we were able to teach this to our sons, actually. And this makes us really quite different, and I think quite important to listen to that perspective in order to have a healthy planet. But when I was thinking also about this, I was thinking that one of the other things we need is democratic motherism. And this applies, of course, to anybody who has any kind of mothering in them, male or female, because it's about taking care of, you know, it's about being accountable to in the ways that, you know, a mother is. So, you know, what I'm thinking about is, you know, an international, democratic, possibly socialist, womanism and motherism of the planet.
Alice, I see that a whole section of your book, The Cushion in the Road, is devoted to the subject of Palestine.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe you could tell us a bit about your feelings about Palestine and your activities as well. I know you're very active.
Well, I have been very active. I'm actually taking something of a break now for health reasons. But the injustice to the Palestinian people over 60-something years is just startling. And again, I see it as something that wears us down. It wears humanity down. It hurts humanity when an injustice is not addressed. We are damaged by that. We are offended by that, and we should try with every ounce of our you know, intelligence and will and fierceness to look at whatever it is and to speak some part of our peace about it. I mean, we may not, you know, go to Palestine, we may not, you know, try to get on the boat, we may not, you know, go to Gaza, any of that, but we have to educate ourselves enough about what the actual history is and what the situation is to speak our little piece. That we can do. Because otherwise, you start to stuff into yourself what you know is wrong, and it's bound to make us unhealthy. I mean, how can we be healthy knowing that for all these years we have been so lied to about what is happening there? We've been totally lied to about who the Palestinian people are, you know, and about what Israel's agenda is. I mean, totally. For kind of a speed introduction and grasp of so much of what is going on in the world, I highly recommend David Icke, I-C-K-E. He's this Englishman who just wrote a book called Human Race, Get Off Your Knees. Because we need now somebody with overview. You know, we need to be studying with teachers who have an overview. And somebody who somehow, you know, through all of these paths, you know, all of us from the 60s took in trying to get, you know, wisdom, you know, we need now to be listening to these people. We need to see, well, okay, so you know, you did ayahuasca. What did that tell you? You know, okay, you tried hiking to the Himalayas. What did you get from that? How does that help you see what it is we need to be doing here? And David Icke is one such person who you know, was opened up. You know, I mean, he didn't have to be. He was working for the BBC. He was British. He was white. I mean, he didn't have to be enlightened, but somehow he managed it. Hallelujah.
Hmm.
You know, I mean, and you know, you and I know Howard Zinn. I mean, he was such a force. You know, I mean, you cannot move, especially in consciousness and psychically, without embracing whatever enlightenment, you know, happens to fall your way. So somebody mentions a book, somebody mentions a movie, they want to have a conversation about something, they want to form a circle, do that.
And have you been to Palestine?
I have. I've been to Gaza, and I've been to the West Bank. And I've seen that hideous wall. Nobody who hasn't seen that wall can even imagine what it looks like and what it feels like. I mean, it is so enormous that no photograph I've ever seen does it justice. And I've tried to get to Gaza a second time with $2 million worth of food and medicine, only to be turned back in Egypt because they said that you couldn't take milk because it was a liquid. The children may be dying, but if you try to give them some milk and it's liquid, you cannot take it. And we had, hundreds of people who wanted to go, and they permitted, 67 people. I wasn't able to go back again because I'd already been. And then the next time was on a boat trying to get to Gaza from Athens, and the Israeli government had made sure that the Greek government, which was very shaky, and they're having so many problems, they were very much used to keep us from leaving the shore of Athens, but we did. We left anyway. And they sent armed commandos to force us back. But we got about 10 miles out into the water, which is fine, because the main thing is to leave the shore, wherever it is. Just leave the shore. Don't stay on a shore that's not working. It's time to leave it. And you may not get very far, but you will have left what you know is not healthy for you.
And bravely, too, a powerful poem in the volume The World Will Follow Joy is sailing the hot streets of Athens. I think there's another poem, To the Freedom Riders of Palestine. Is that a connection to your own experience as a youngster?
Well, first, sailing the hot streets of Athens, it took us 2 weeks to even get, anywhere. And it was hot as an oven. But yes, the Freedom Rides, part of what is happening in Palestine is that the people are desperately trying to, form and keep formed a peace movement. I mean, it's been there all along, but they are connecting with our movement in the South. And so, Palestinians, for instance, are trying to get on buses and ride on the Jewish-only roads. The Zionist only roads, you'd have to grow up in the South, maybe, to even imagine what that felt like, to suddenly be in a whole other place in the world where everything is segregated and even the roads are segregated. I mean, we didn't have segregated roads even in Georgia. White people and black people, we use the same roads, even though sometimes they would drive by and force us into the ditch. But in Palestine, you can't even share roads and the little tracks that they have left for the Palestinian people. I mean, there again, it's so clear that when you demean other people, when your focus is to just make them feel like nothing, what does that do to you? I mean, who are you in that moment? So I feel like the Israelis, and there's a strong peace movement in Israel. The Israelis are so in danger of losing so much by this behavior. I mean, this is so bad for them psychically. It is really, really bad. And I feel for them. I feel for them as much as I feel for the Palestinians.
Well, we're challenged again and again by what you've said to us this morning, Alice. I thought we have a few minutes left. I thought you might tell us, because we're a community station located here in Mendocino County, I wonder if you could just give us your thoughts about living out here in the Anderson Valley and how you came to be here and maybe what you like or don't like about it.
Mm-hmm. Well, I love KZYX, and I have supported it from the beginning, I think. I love the Anderson Valley, and I came there in the late 70s because I was looking for a place to write The Color Purple. And my then partner, who, thank goodness, loved to drive, had driven me all over Northern California looking for just the right spot. And we settled in Boonville because it was beautiful, and we found a little place near the town. It was $300 a month, which we could afford, just. And I settled down to, write The Color Purple, spending many days and afternoons and mornings and whatever time we had in Hindi woods in the river and going to the ocean. And it's a wonderful place to have a garden, which I do, and I grow food, and I have great neighbors who help me grow food and chickens. And it is a wonderful feeling. I had, really good friends there almost from the beginning, Jan Wax and Chris Bing and Charlie Hochberg, and actually my friends built my house. Just my friends there, and it's a wonderful gift. I think of them every single time I'm there because they did it with such beautiful friendship and thoughtfulness. So what else was it, Cal, that you asked me?
That was it. If I could just say, well, Alice, it's a gift for all of us to have you here with us, even if we don't get to see you often or talk to you often, just knowing that you have a home here, I think, is a way of to inspire us and to get us to think about all the things that you write about. So I know you're very busy and you have another appointment this morning. So let me let you go. But thank you again very much for joining us on Talking About California.
Thank you so much for asking me to do this. Have a wonderful day.
Thanks. And listeners, I should remind you that I hope you'll be generous in helping to support KZYX, helping us to, have a chance to listen to people like Alice Walker. So that's it for this morning. We'll be back next week at the same time. This is Talking About California. My name's Cal Winslow. I'm your host. And good morning until then. Thanks. Bye.